702 on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Streaming on the Prime Media Plus app
and on DStv channel 856.
On the show today, a shooting at the Mhlathuze Municipality Civic Center. Two bodyguards have been fatally wounded. And who are the Gqaba brothers, the powerful KZN family linked to the state or linked by the state in the murder of AKA? By the close of business today, people of Ekurhuleni may have no Speaker of Council and no Mayor. Motions of no confidence are playing out there. And many of you have your bags packed and ready for some time away, whether you're going to see Bomma or if you're traveling to somewhere nice. We speak to the tourism department and the RTMC for what to look out for on the roads. That and more on the Midday Report with me, Khomotso Modise, in for Mandy Wiener.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
Good afternoon. It's just gone 8 minutes past 12, and that means it's time for our midday update right here on the Midday Report. My name is Khomotso Modise, and I'm in for Mandy Wiener. We've got quite a bit ready for you for the show this afternoon. A lot's happening, and it seems a lot's been happening in KZN, because that's where we're going to be starting this afternoon. We saw this morning that shooting at the Mhlathuze Civic Center, where it seems there was a shootout between bodyguards and at least two have been fatally wounded. Now, that's been playing out this morning. We hear the law enforcement agencies and emergency services are on the scene. And Ndlanhla Mabaso, our KZN correspondent, is out there and he joins us now live. Ndlanhla, thank you so much for joining us. You've been following this story this morning. Just give us an update on what exactly happened this morning in Mhlathuze.
Well, Khumoso, before the city could even confirm the incident, eyewitness news was alerted just a few minutes after the incident by some of our forces within that municipality. What we do know at this stage, Khumoso, which police have also confirmed, is that an off-duty bodyguard belonging to the mayor's team went in the council the municipality offices, where officials had been in a caucus meeting that was debating and discussing the draft budget that is. And then, of course, we are told that he then opened fire at one of his colleagues belonging to the city manager now. And then one of the city manager's bodyguard then shot and killed the off-duty bodyguard who had killed his colleague. So that's what we know at this stage, that two bodyguards are now dead and that police are investigating the murder cases. In fact, as we speak, Khumoso, they are still combing that crime scene on the KZN North Coast.
And were there any officials present there? I'm hearing it was a caucus meeting. Is that what was going on?
Yes, indeed. Officials were present in that particular meeting inside the council chambers. And it happened just outside the foyer. When you step out of the council meeting at Mhlathuze, that's what the first thing you meet there is the foyer where there are chairs. The first one who was shot and killed belonging to the city manager had actually been sitting down when the off-duty bodyguard came in. We do understand that he opened fire right there. That's when some of the officials, including the speaker of the district municipality, Specie Mkhwanazi, was then whisked out by her protectors, and some of the remaining protectors had to secure the mayor and then the city manager, but also some councillors, including the deputy mayor. So we do know that that particular council meeting also has now been postponed to 1 o'clock. But let's take a listen to what the police spokesperson Robert Nechiwunda had to say about the whole incident.
Voice of Colonel Robert Nechiwunda. Police are at an active crime scene at Mhlathuze Municipal Offices in Richards Bay following a shooting incident on Thursday morning. Information at police disposal at this stage indicates that an off-duty bodyguard shot and fatally wounded another bodyguard. The suspect was also shot and fatally wounded by another bodyguard colleague of the first victim. Investigations will be instituted to establish what could have been the motive behind the shooting.
Ndlanhla, just paint the scene for us in that area politically. Have there been political tensions in the Mhlathuze area? We don't want to draw any conclusions here. Of course, investigations are underway. But what's been the political space there?
I think this Khumoso alone has just sent shockwaves, given the fact that both the mayor and the city manager, people that have been working together, and they belong to the same political party, which is the IFP, because that's an IFP-led municipality. And you would know, Homoso, that currently the IFP is in, you know, a fight to win this provincial government in this upcoming polls in May 29. So looking at Mshatuze, really, it's not one of the areas that you would, you know, link political violence to, but also political violence is no stranger at all to any area that is in the north of KwaZulu-Natal. So this came as a shock to a lot of people, but given the election year and given the recommendations, Homonso, of the Moirani Commission and some of its findings, the Moirani Commission, which probed political killings in KwaZulu-Natal back in 2018, did mention that whenever there are going to be elections, be it local, national and provincial, there's always going to be killings. And it seems it rises more during those times, according to the Commission, Homonso.
All right, that's Ntandla Mabaso, EWN reporter out in KZN. He's been following that shooting in Mhlatuze. Two bodyguards have been fatally wounded, and EWN will keep us updated in the bulletins.
Because this journey is better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
So we are taking your WhatsApp voice notes and your WhatsApp texts on 072-702-1702 and on 072-567-1567. That's if you're in Cape Town. This is the Midday Report on 702 and Cape Talk. We're staying in KZN because there seems to be a lot happening there. Now, yesterday we've been following the story of the AKA and Tebello Tibs Motshwane bail hearing that's been playing out in the Durban Magistrates Court. Five men linked to the murder of AKA and Tibs are there, have been there applying for bail. But very interesting details came out yesterday. And the surname Gaba, Gaba Brothers, came up there in KZN. And I can tell you that there's been a lot that's been said. But someone that's been following KZN matters, but reporting quite extensively on what's been going in KZN for many years now, is Oren Singh. Oren, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for taking the time. I'm interested, and I wanted to speak to you particularly because the name Gaba, or the surname Gaba, is a popular one in KZN.
Popular, probably not for the right reasons, Khumotso. Having worked in KZN as a reporter for more than a decade prior to me relocating to Johannesburg, you know, you'd always come across rumors and hearsay in and among the people living in KwaZulu-Natal about the Gaba brothers. And they're a feared family. That's without a doubt a feared family in KwaZulu-Natal. And they've built their empire around taxis and only taxis and the public transportation industry. More specifically, they do have sort of agreements with Etiquette Municipality in terms of Durban Transport. I know that there were cases that played out in the Durban High Court regarding their contracts with Durban Transport and the municipality threatening to end their contracts, which didn't end well at the end of the day. But the Gaba brothers are a very renowned, prominent family in KwaZulu-Natal that most people that come from KZN know the surname.
Okay, so how are they being linked to the murder of AKA?
So I think I need to start by saying, Khumotso, that it's a very extensive family. And this family tree that we look at, the Gaba brothers, there's about 12, I would say, brothers in total that are running this empire of the taxi empire. And only one brother so far has been implicated. And we heard this come out in the Durban Magistrates Court yesterday, where the state was presenting evidence as to why the five men shouldn't be granted bail. Mm. And in doing so, the one question on everyone's lips initially when we heard the sum of 803,455 rand being paid into the account of accused four, Durban businessman Mziwe Themba Gwabeni, the question was, who paid him the money?
Yeah.
And that question was answered yesterday by the state when the investigating officer, by way of affidavit, revealed that the money was paid into his account via a company called Bright Circle. Now, the company Bright Circle is owned and sole directorship of a certain Sydney, Mafunda Gaba.
Ah.
And he used his company, Bright Circle, to pay a sum of more than 800,000 rand into Accused 4's bank account.
Why does that matter? What does that have to do with AKA?
That was the question I had myself.
Yes.
Why did the state present that evidence? Everyone had the questions, but that could have been saved to come up at a later stage during trial. But it doesn't lend to the actual matter at hand, and that being bail. The state did, however, put together a compelling argument in a sense as to why the accused shouldn't be granted bail, saying that there is evidence to suggest that should they be granted bail, they could skip the country, that they have the means and resources, being taxi owners and businessmen and so forth, to get away from where their addresses are and so forth. So the state saying that these men shouldn't be granted bail.
So there's a counter argument that the defense has presented to say, whoa, this has nothing to do with the murder of AKA. In fact, we were doing business together and this was just for consultancy fees.
And that's the thing the state is going to have to prove going forward. I mean, the fact that they've dropped this major bombshell and implicating this prominent family, but at least one person of this prominent family in this case, they're now going to need to provide further evidence as to why this is relevant in a bail application. I don't see the relevance of it being brought or put forward in a bail application, but the state did see that. And the reason they mention Mr. Sydney Kaba's name. Going forward, what we're going to see now is, are there going to be more arrests? Is Sydney Kaba going to be arrested, hand himself over to police? What evidence does the state have against him in saying that you had no business dealings with Mr. Gobeni's company? So why was this sum paid the day after the murder? Remember, the money was paid into Mr. Gwabeni's account, as the state alleges, on the 11th of February. We know that AKA and Tibbs were gunned down on the 10th, on the evening of the 10th. And the state is alleging that all the accused gathered at Mr. Gwabeni's home on the 11th, where he made a call, allegedly, to Mr. Kaba, and a sum of 803,000 and some odd change was paid into his account, which he then directly paid, allegedly, into his co-accused bank accounts, a sum of about 133,000 rand each.
When's the matter back in the court and what are we expecting?
Matter's back on court on Tuesday. We're expecting the state to wrap up their arguments in terms of not allowing the accused to be granted bail. We'll then see the matter probably rolled over to another date for the magistrate to make a judgment on bail.
All right, Aaron Singh, EWN reporter, following that matter there. He has been covering this story quite extensively, but it seems like the dots are connecting now. And now the question that everyone has is, why would the powerful, prominent and very rich Kaba family want AKA dead?
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
All right, let's turn our focus to this now. So the people of Ekurhuleni may end this day or see the end of this day without a speaker in council and without a mayor, because a lot's playing out there in Ekurhuleni today. There are two motions of no confidence that are going to be heard or that are currently being heard in council. Now, we do know that the mayor has survived three motions, but it seems he won't survive this one. And the speaker, Thabiseng Chibenga, who is an EFF member, is accused of protecting EFF members when they started a scuffle in council. That's where we find Alpha Ramoshwana. He's our reporter out in Ekurhuleni. Alpha, thank you so much for joining us. Maybe let's just start with the speaker. Why is her job on the line?
Good afternoon, Kumuto. Yes, it's double trouble here today in the Ekurhuleni council. And the speaker of council, who comes from the EFF, is accused of political bias. As you know, the speaker is supposed to, in a way, be non-partisan in council. She's supposed to not take sides in business, in matters of the council. And a few weeks ago, Kumuto, in fact, in the end of February, there was a scuffle that ensued between ANC and EFF councillors. And she was expected to, you know, denounce the scuffle. She was expected to hold them, to call them to order and hold them accountable for starting the fight. She collapsed the meeting without calling them to order. And the ANC is basically accusing the speaker. The Action SA as well and the DA are all accusing the speaker of taking sides and protecting her, her fellow EFF members. So her motion is solely on her failure to call her party members to order when they started a scuffle with fellow councillors yesterday. And the mayor on the other side, who comes from the AIC, is facing a motion of no confidence that was brought by the Action SA. And they are accusing him of collapsing the city's finances. They are accusing him of neglecting service ever in the city of Ekurhuleni. But today we have spoken to Ngodwana, and he has dismissed these claims. Khumutso, he is saying that he is not in any way in neglecting service delivery. In fact, we asked him what he rates his leadership out of 10, and he boldly said he's a 7 out of 10 in the last year. As you would know, he was elected into the position through the backing of the ANC and the EFF in March last year. So he's been in office for exactly a year. But let's take a listen to what else he had to say.
Okay, let me start with the rating of myself. I will say out of 10, I give myself 7, because you cannot say you've done everything as a person. There are those challenges. You know that when you took over in the office, there's always the challenges. And if you remember with our issue in Ekurhuleni, it was a disaster when I came in last April, where you find that there were no collection of refuse of waste. There were illegal dumpings all over. Our township were a mess. And we'll remember what happened in Tembisa, the burning of Tembisa. It was a mess. So I will say I'm proud of what I've done so far, because we did bring the difference to our communities. Yes, there's still a lot to be improved, because we understand that some of the things that needs a lot of budget, a lot of money.
So, Arthur, I know that these things can take the entire day. We've seen these council meetings, going into the late evening. So what has been done today? Has there been any progress made? Okay. We don't have Alpha there. I think we've lost him. And we're going to keep tabs on Alpha through the EWN team. These council meetings can take a very, very long time. And I think that today, because there are two motions of no confidence, we might see this meeting going on to the late evening. Both the speaker and the mayor in Ekurhuleni really facing the chop. And we could see them without a mayor and speaker by the end of business today.
Because this journey is better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
Good day, Khumutso. It's Norman here in Pretoria. Thank you so much for standing in for Mandy Wiener. I think it's quite fascinating having listened this morning to the open line and hearing this family, the Kaba family linked to the AKA murder. I think that's going to be interesting as the police continue with their investigation. I'm fascinated to know in terms of their business linkage with the municipalities and various contracts and sites, as some people were testifying on the Clement Manyathela show. So let's wait and see, and let's hope the police can do their work.
You know, Norman, I'm also fascinated. I think I'm a little more fascinated. I mean, I've been seeing all these links that have been drawn between the Kaba family and government, and even Gauteng. I mean, we've been hearing how in Gauteng, they're linked to the Rea Vaya contracts as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. All right, let's move now to Cape Town, where the public protector advocate Caleka is there reading some of her reports. And there have been some interesting reports delivered today. We've got EWN parliamentary reporter Lindsay Dendlinger, who joins us now live. Lindsay, I'm hearing something about a complaint on the president. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Khumutso. Well, a complaint stemming back to 2021, also lodged against the president by the African Transformation Movement. You will remember that it's the party that also complained against him in the Palapala matter. And this one a little bit more offbeat. It has to do with the Mega Kloof residential development in Tshwane. And essentially, the ATM complained that the president had allegedly invited a contractor to get involved in this particular project, and alleged that that behavior went against state procurement and tender processes. But the public protector has cleared him in that matter. She says that it's a known public-private partnership. It's one of a list of projects from the Human Settlements Department in which government is teaming up with the private sector to create these housing projects and these mega cities. And so the president's conduct cannot really be construed as going against the Public Finance Management Act or the Constitution in terms of his ethical behavior.
And any other reports of interest that have been given today? I know that there have been a number of people who have said they would be approaching the public protector to lay complaints.
Well, these are the last tranche of reports that stem from this financial year that is fast drawing to a close. Over 7,000 reports, Khamotso. Some of them date back to 2021. And the public protector making the point that investigators are really overworked. There are many vacancies in the office. And the complaints continue to flow in. Many of them are service delivery related, as you can imagine. Several relate to water problems in Mpumalanga, in Gauteng, where communities feel that they are not getting what they should be getting in terms of a clean water supply. And so a fair number of these reports that have been delivered today date back at least two or so years. And as I said, several thousand reports on the tables, and the public protector also announcing today various new offices, that temporary offices that will be opened, and that is why she's in the Western Cape. Several of them linked to magistrates' courts in this province, where people can go and lodge complaints. So the work is really just piling up for the public protector.
All right, let's leave it there. It's Lindsay Dendlinger out in Cape Town. She's following the public protector, and it's already been almost six months since Advocate Galega was appointed. And I think it's going to be interesting to hear what she says in this press briefing about the months that she spent in that office.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
That's right. Welcome back. This is the Midday Report. My name is Khomotso Modise, and I'm in for Mandy Wiener. And we've been looking at a number of stories in KZN, and we also had a look at that briefing by the public protector. But now we're going to shift our focus to what's been happening in Pretoria, where the minister in the presidency, Khumbudzo Ntshavheni, has been giving an update on the cabinet meeting yesterday. And earlier on, she has spoken about how cabinet has established a water task team to be chaired by Deputy President Paul Mashatile. And they're there to deal with the country's water supply challenges. Let's take a listen.
On water supply challenges in Gauteng and eThekwini, Cabinet was updated about some of the major contributors to the water supply challenges affecting Gauteng and eThekwini, which amongst others includes increased demand due to rapid population growth, water losses in the municipal water distribution systems due to aged infrastructure, and the electricity supply interruptions that impact the pace of refilling the reservoirs. Cabinet was updated about the progress with the Lesotho Highlands Water Phase 2 and Umkhomazi Water projects to build water supply resilience, whilst the Department of Water and Sanitation is working with affected cities on the improvement and renewal of the aged water infrastructure to minimize water losses. Cabinet established a water task team to be chaired by the Deputy President, Mr. Paul Mashatile, that will give dedicated focus to the resolution of the water challenges facing the country. This task team will be constituted by the Department of Water and Sanitation, COCTA, Human Settlements, Public Works and Infrastructure, Agricultural Land Reform and Rural Development, and the police. On economic development, first is the industrial policy and the reimagined industrial strategy review. Cabinet was updated on the progress with the implementation of South Africa's industrial policy and strategy during the sixth administration.
All right, so we're sitting with another task team. And joining us is EWN reporter Veronica Makhwadi. She's been following the story this morning. Veronica, what are they going to do? What's the plan?
You know, Khomotso, I think it's quite interesting that you say another task team, which is just another word for, remember before we were calling them water war rooms.
Yes.
Essentially, this is what we've been told now. And this comes off the back, obviously, of just some of the water challenges that have been hitting several provinces, especially Gauteng, the city of Joburg being one of the worst, that we keep seeing the sort of erratic water supply challenges that are happening. But just before she spoke about that task team, Khomotso, she also mentioned something that's very important about the issues of those sort of, you know, water scarce provinces that we have. Earlier this month, the Water and Sanitation Department signed an agreement with their counterpart in Zimbabwe to establish essentially some sort of a pipe system that will take water from the Beitbridge water treatment works into Musina. We know that Musina in Limpopo is one of those areas that have been essentially troubled with regards to water supply. So what we're seeing essentially, and that what came out of today's briefing, was the minister talking about South Africa's reliance essentially on supplying, or rather getting water in that cross-border effort, and how we're looking to our neighbors to, of course, fill in and plug in those gaps of where we are lacking in terms of water supply. It's very important, the conversation about the Lesotho Highlands Water Project and that second phase, which hasn't been completed. And you know, Khomotso, without the water coming in from Lesotho, provinces like Gauteng continue, of course, to face a potential severe water constraint.
Are there any timelines here that the minister may have given?
In regards to the funneling of water coming out from Zimbabwe into Limpopo, into Messina, she's mentioned, of course, that a major construction on that pipeline is currently underway, that has officially been, you know, put into place, and construction is beginning in regards to that pipeline. When, of course, that will end, we're not too sure. And I think that is the issue that comes in communities like Messina that have for years now been promised various projects to mitigate that water challenge there. And in regards to the Lesotho Highlands project in that second phase, this is again a big concern in regards to the fact that we were told that that phase would have been completed, I believe, by last year already. But there has been several delays in Lesotho itself, but also in regards to, you know, just the construction efforts happening between that Vaal River system there.
All right, that's EWN reporter Veronica Mahwadi there giving us an update. Another, task team set up now to deal with the water challenges. How confident are you that they will get the work done? It seems as though there's committees and committees on committees that are set up, and we're hoping that something will actually be yielded, or something will come from the latest developments.
Because this journey is better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
All right, this is 702 and Cape Talk, the Midday Report. My name is Khomotso Modise. I'm in for Mandy Wiener today. And let's shift our focus now to a story that's been playing out in Soweto. There's been taxi violence over the last few weeks in Soweto. And the Gauteng Department of Roads and Transport has now intervened. They will be gazetting a notice to suspend the operations of the association's Wata and Nandue. This is in a bid to quell the tensions in that area and to stop the war. Joining us now is Lesiba Mbia, and he joins us on the line. Lesiba, thank you so much for joining us. You're the spokesperson for Gauteng Transport. Lesiba, just talk us through whether there's actually been consultation here with these taxi associations before the decision to suspend their operations in Soweto.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon to the listeners and yourself. Also, yes, there has been several pre-consultations, even before the MEC would have decided to actually take these extraordinary measures. And of course, you would know that in terms of the National Land Transport Act, she is empowered by that piece of legislation, particularly in Section 91B, to actually publish a notice of her intentions to invoke those extraordinary measures. You would know that in the recent time, there has been violence, there has been unrest. There has been a situation that is not normal in terms of the safety of the ridership as well as the safety of the community. So yes, there has been consultations with this association and with their mother body, SANTACO and GNTA.
Do we know what's been fueling the violence in that area between the taxi associations?
Well, we can speculate in terms of the reasons of the violence. But what we have also taken note of is the department's role. And the MEC has acceded and taken responsibility in terms of the role the department has done to actually if I may use a lack of a better word, exacerbate the reasons of the conflict. We found that there are officials that have been implicated within the department that would have taken decisions that were contrary to, social cohesion and so forth. So as the MEC is currently investigating the extent of the reasons of the decisions that would have been taken. For instance, there are two associations, there are two associations that have been registered on the same route. Now that tells you that it is a recipe for disaster. But of course, that is merely part one of the reasons of the conflict. But we cannot take it lying down anymore.
Yeah. Are you saying that there was some sort of, or there seems to be some sort of corruption here with your own officials in the department?
We are confirming that there has been an incident where two associations have been registered on the same route. Also confirming that some of the officials that have taken decision are no longer in the employ of the state, and as a result, we are going to be pursuing those particular individuals. And that is why we are saying that, much as we condemn the killings and the exacerbation of these violences, the departmental officials, some of the departmental officials, cannot be absolved from the problems that are persisting in the taxi industry. Obviously, that is not wholehearted. We are not wholeheartedly, apportioning blame to the department, but we are taking some of the responsibility in terms of the administrative anomalies that have taken within the system.
All right. So Wata and Nandua are the main players on the routes there in Soweto. What happens now? Who operates there? Are the associations that are now going to be operating? What does this mean for the people of Soweto?
So the MEC is going to be publishing a notice in the Provincial Gazette in terms of the NLTA Section 91. And obviously, interested parties, including the taxi association and the community, are going to be permitted to make representations in terms of within the next 7 days to say why should the MEC not invoke that Section 91, which basically suspends operations within that particular system. But she met with the community yesterday, and she did communicate alternative measures that the department is going to be doing in the process of trying to get to the bottom of this anomaly, and also in the intent of finding a long-lasting solution.
All right, so let's leave it there. This is Lesiba Mpia. He's the Gauteng Transport spokesperson. We see there the department will be gazetting a notice to suspend the operations of Wata and Nandue. If you're in Soweto, I want to hear from you. How are you affected by the violence that's been playing out there?
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
All these task teams are not doing anything. They're just prolonging everything. It's the task teams don't do a single thing. It's just a prolonged story. And honestly, it sounded like that lady was just reciting something that she read or got ChatGPT to generate. It was... sounded rather weird.
Hi, good afternoon, guys. You know, this Kava brothers, it is allegedly reported that these fellas told Zuma to can the high-speed train between Johannesburg and Durban. So, citing that they lose business because they've got too many taxis on that route alone.
lot that's come out and the links that have been drawn between the Gqaba brothers and really prominent people in South Africa. I saw that the Gqaba brothers are said to be related to the former president, Jacob Zuma. I believe they are his nephews. And a lot is coming out. And it's really interesting to see how powerful they are. But that doesn't answer the question that we all have. And that is, how or why would the Gqaba brothers be interested in seeing AKA dead? And that's the question that should be answered in the trial that will follow. And then on the water issue, I agree. I mean, I'm so tired of all the task teams. If they don't call them task teams, as Veronica said, they're called war rooms. But do they yield any results? And I'm not sure. I think all we can do now is hope that this one will yield some results and we'll start seeing proper management of our water systems.
Because this journey is better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
Welcome back. This is the Midday Report. My name is Khomotso Modise. I'm in for Mandy Wiener. And thank you so much for your contributions on the show today. Let's shift our focus now to something more lighthearted. And that is what's happening on the tourism front. It is a big weekend. Some may call it a weekend in Kulu, right? People traveling. People are going to be either seeing family. I know that they are. There's a pilgrimage in Limpopo. If you are, if you attend church in that area, the ZCC has massive gatherings there as well. We've got Tasneem Karim, who is from the Department of Tourism, joining us. Tasneem, thank you so much. I think I want to start with your warning that you've made against people falling for scams, potential scams in the tourism industry. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Khomotso, and thank you for having me.
Yes, talk us through what these scams are that are happening at this time of the year.
Okay, so it's continuous, but of course it does increase just before major holiday seasons. There are very many scams around, and some of the ones that we've picked up include fake websites where you can go and make a booking or someone contacting you with a holiday special. There's been a lot of different ones, or a travel agent that takes all of your bookings and then actually doesn't make them, which is what happened in a big way in December in Cape Town. I'm not sure if you remember seeing that on the news. But these are some of the things that do keep coming up. Some of these fraudsters even go so far as to exhibit at a show or in a flea market, and offer you a competition. You enter a competition, and then they say you've won. You just have to pay for your partner. You pay, and then they disappear. So there's lots of things like that. And for those people who haven't yet made their bookings, they are a little bit more susceptible because they're probably desperately looking for bookings, and that's when you drop your guard. And so, what we've done is we've just put up some tips on our website and on social media just to remind people, because a lot of these things people do know, but remind people of what to look out for so that you can reduce your risk.
Yeah, and what are some of those tips? I see that you've put together a really lovely list here from watching the weather, people to wear sunscreen. What else should travelers at this time of the year be doing?
Okay, so just to go back to the one on the fraudsters, the obvious rule of thumb is that if the deal looks too good to be true, it probably is. Mm. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that there are a number of things you can look for to reduce the risk. Nothing is foolproof, but at least you can try and reduce the risk. You should ask for a written quotation, and on that quotation you should look for a company registration. You should look whether they're a member of the tourism association. You should look if they have premises, if they have a landline number. You should look for fuzzy images on their website or links that don't work. All of those are red flags that will help you to just raise your alarm and just go and check carefully. So those are some of the things just on preventing fraudsters from, spoiling up otherwise good holidays. So those are some of the tips on that. And then we've also put some tips about road safety. We know, I know that it was announced this morning, we're already expecting 1 million cars on the road this Easter. So it's, road safety is some of what we really need to take better care of, and just reminding drivers, you know, and also families, how to take care of yourself and your family. For example, in South Africa, we do need to watch for pedestrians. We know that the biggest fatality rate does involve pedestrians. So it's just something you should be alert for. Livestock, potholes, you know, traffic lights that are not functioning. These are all of the things you need to be alert about. But also other things like, you know, many people drop their guard and tend to stay out late, and you should try and avoid driving late at night and on an unlit road where you're not very familiar with the area, and you know you could just expose yourself to all sorts of harms. Remember to keep your luggage and your valuables locked away in your boot. Remember to check your car to avoid remote jamming, especially in an area you're not familiar with. You know, things like that.
Sure. And if you're like me and you do like to leave things to the last minute, where should people look for some fun things to do over the weekend?
So, you know, the SA Tourism, which is an agency of the Department of Tourism, you know, there's a number of links that they have, which you can go to and check. A number of the parks still may have placed all the sand parks that are all listed there now, the links that are there for fun things to do. So I think, you know, please do go. And often it's a short left that ends up being the most fun. Just remember to keep safe.
Sure. Thank you so much. That is Tasneem Karim, the spokesperson for the Department of Tourism. I don't know. I mean, I now have a bit of FOMO. Like, I feel like I should have prepared. I should have made some bookings for this weekend. So I'm going to go on to those websites and check out what may be available. But yeah, on the traffic front, I think we're all watching to see what the roads look like. Over a million vehicles expected on South Africa's main highways over the Easter period. That's according to the RTMC. And so if you are traveling, please make sure that you are safe and you travel very smartly. Make sure that you use roads with proper lighting and make sure that you plan ahead.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
All right, so that story on the Gaba brothers is the one that we are going to continue keeping an eye on as EWN. We're also staying in KZN, where we've been seeing that shooting in Mhlathuze. It's still an active scene, it seems, where law enforcement and emergency services are on the scene. Two bodyguards were shot there, or at least fatally wounded there, and we're waiting to hear if there have been any other injuries in that area. Of course, EWN is also under the public protector's briefing there in the Western Cape, and we had Lindsay Dendlinger from our parliamentary team who's keeping an eye on that story. There's a lot more that's coming throughout the day on in our EWN bulletins, so you can keep listening. But for now, this does bring us to the end of the Midday Report with me, Khomotso Modise. I've been in for Mandy Wiener. Thank you so much for listening and tuning in. I'm wishing you safe travels. If you're Christian, happy Easter. Enjoy this time of the year. And everyone else, enjoy the rest, and let's meet again sometime next week.